You must be Barry. I'm Diana.
Hi, Barry. I'm Diana. That's not right. Great.
So this is us.
Yeah, this is us.
Oh, awesome. As a bat signal, that's your... Oh, sorry. That's your signal. That means we have to go now.
Yeah, that's what that means.
It's so cool.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Eric.
Woo woo! And this is House Podcastica.
This episode, we're covering Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Ooh. Yeah. And why the heck would we do this? Well, there's a few reasons. One, it's been a while since Cobra Kai, and it's like a month until our next series, which is Handmaid's Tale, and I wanted to put something out. But also, everyone you just heard, Dan, Eric, and Rich, we've all been friends for literally decades. Can I say how many years we've been friends, Dan, or would you rather I not say?
That's all right.
It's 41.
Holy.
Yep.
That's not
you
true.
Guys are old.
That's not true.
Because we
That's
were friends
impossible.
Before we were born. And so I thought it would be fun for all of us to do a podcast together, because I podcast with all you guys, but not together. And you guys are my own personal Justice League.
Aww.
So, Richard, you're the Flash. So, yes. So I looked to see what's coming up, and there was King Kong versus Godzilla, which I'm gonna see that, but it's I didn't think there would be much to talk about, so I proposed Justice League. You guys said yes, and also I'm interested in this movie because, you know, if you don't realize this, I'm sure most people listening to me do, but it came out already in 2017. And the story behind it was that the director, Zack Snyder, was in the middle of directing it. And then his 20-year-old daughter, Autumn, died by suicide. And that's super sad. And he, at the same time, the studio was kind of losing confidence in Zack Snyder because Batman versus Superman was critically panned. So they were giving him all these notes, like, you got to cut it down to 2 hours, even though it's this movie with all these heroes that he needed to introduce. And also they brought in Joss Whedon to punch up the script and make it lighter, like the Marvel movies, you know? And so he just was not in any shape for this battle with the studio after what happened with his daughter. So he just left. And then Joss Whedon became the new director, and they still had scenes to shoot, and they had a bunch of reshoots. And the movie came out, and it was kind of crappy, I thought. I mean, it was okay. It was kind of fun, but, you know, you could tell that there were two different directors and it was rushed and all this. And so after a while, fans heard that there was a Zack Snyder cut of this movie, and they were kind of wanting to see it. They're like, release the Snyder cut. And it became this huge movement. And they even like put a billboard up in Times Square, I guess.
They had a plane that flew over.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was San Diego Comic-Con, but they had a plane flying with a banner.
Release the Snyder.
And on the super positive side, not that that isn't positive, but they raised $500,000 for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is amazing. And at some point there was enough of a call that HBO Max decided to bankroll it. And it wasn't just a matter of him re-editing it, but they did a bunch of new footage. They shot new footage. Cost $70 million more dollars to make this.
Wow.
Than the original.
Whoa, really? I didn't know that.
I mean, that's like the budget of many movies. The entire budget.
Right.
A whole nother. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't use any footage that Whedon had shot. And it's all so kind of interesting that in between all this, Whedon is getting, you know, canceled almost. Like, people are reporting that he's a big a-hole. So that's sort of part of it too. And they loved working with Zack Snyder. But anyway, this is purely Zack Snyder's vision. I still, even with all that, Batman vs. Superman, I thought was not that great. Man. Had some good parts. So I was not expecting much, but Snyder's hit or miss for me. He also did 300, which was awesome, and Dawn of the Dead, which is my favorite zombie movie ever. So he's hit or miss. But I figured, hey, it'll be fun to talk about whether it's good or bad or somewhere in between. And I just think it's a great story. It's a triumph that Zack Snyder even got to release it. So that's why I thought it would be fun to talk about.
Agreed.
So with all that said, let's get into it. It's our top three highlights for Zack Snyder's Justice League. I figure since it was 4 hours long, the podcast should be at least 8 hours because we usually double the... just kidding. But let's
marathon.
Say in general, you know, just what you guys thought. Would you recommend people go see it or not? Danny, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I'm not like you guys. I'm not like a big comic book or superhero fan.
You're the least geekiest of the four of us, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, in that way, I guess, yeah. But
he's also the best looking, by the way.
There's a correlation there.
Nobody can see us, so we'll go with that. True. I enjoyed it, and I thought it was really cool just because it was like it was for, I felt like it, maybe you guys wouldn't think this, but I think it was like for like a niche audience, and it wasn't like kind of like most movies like Avengers. I know everybody says thinks I guess Avengers in general is a better movie, but like I thought it was really cool in that it didn't try and reach out to the general public. It tried to reach out to a niche audience. It really felt kind of like a comic book type feel when I was listening to it and watching it. Yeah. So I thought that was cool. Like most movies don't bother with it. They want to reach everybody.
Yeah. That's kind of what Joss Whedon was trying to do with it and why it failed, because sometimes when you go in and try to monkey with someone else's vision to basically water it down.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with what you're saying. I think that's what I was telling a friend of mine, Rima. I was saying, I don't know if you'll like it. It feels like a comic geeks movie. And if you're a comic geek, you probably love it. But if not, I'm not so sure. So it's interesting that you're not a comic geek, but you're like sensing that it is a comic geeks movie and you kind of appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, I've read some comic books and so I know like I've probably read a few comic books in my life, but, and so I know kind of, you know, what the feel of a comic book is. And I got that feeling. I actually felt like it could have been like, or it should have been a series instead of a movie.
Yeah. I thought of it as like a big budget series that I was binging.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been a 4-episode series, huh?
It flowed really quickly. I mean, I was expecting it to drag, and I was expecting it to be, you know, an endeavor to get through. But I remember looking at the time and I was like already halfway through, and I'm like, wow, it's moving pretty quickly.
Yeah. Same here. I was like, oh man, there's a lot I could do in 4 hours.
Yeah.
But then I got sucked into it and I was like, hey, this is good.
Me too. I'll just go next. Like, I thought it was freaking awesome. I loved it. And I'm really surprised at that because I didn't like the original hardly at all. And Zack Snyder I just thought maybe he lost his touch, but it was great. And I was never bored. Not once. I watched it twice. I watched it again today at 1.5 speed just to figure out what the hell was going on. And I liked watching it the second time too. So I really liked it. What about you, Rich?
So I read a negative review of this movie by a critic named Maya Phillips. And she said, quote, "Here's an indelicate orgy of special effects, fight scenes burdened with slow motion attacks, set to tirelessly didactic score. More blasts, more impalings, more decapitation, boo!" End quote. And I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be good. That's kind of my modus operandi. Usually what the critics hate, I like. So I was like, I was excited to watch it at that point.
It's like when somebody makes you some food and you can say the same words, but like, what is this versus, oh, what's this? Something like that. So go on. I'm sorry.
I mean, the characters were, you know, way more fleshed out. It was a lot better. The action was better. Everything was explained at the end of the movie. I wasn't left with a bunch of questions. Well, not entirely true. I wasn't left with as many questions as when I watched the theatrical version. Right. And it felt like there was hardly any loose ends in this particular movie. Like in the opening scene, for example, you know, everything felt like it starts with Superman's death, and then you see Superman scream, radiating out, activating all the mother boxes, and I was like, Oh, that's why they did that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Joss Whedon, maybe he, you know, he's like, I'm going to do my Whedon thing and everyone's going to love it, and didn't pay enough attention to all the little details that Zack Snyder was carefully placing. And he's like, we don't need Darkseid in this.
I think almost all of my complaints were all those moments that he tried to add that just didn't work. Yeah. That came off.
So you liked it? Because I know you weren't, you were not optimistic that it was going to be any good.
I definitely had a low expectation for this because I didn't like the original version. I didn't like Batman versus Superman, mainly because, you know, I've seen some of these comics and they just, they're not living up to them. And I've been so disappointed. I mean, there were definitely some cool parts in the first iteration.
Yeah. But, I thought so too.
But yeah, so many things that weren't explained, characters that weren't fleshed out, like you said, and, you know, motivations but this one, everything flowed and I had a few problems, but overall it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. So yeah.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of the CGI?
I love the look of Zack Snyder's movies, the blackness and just the spectacle. Like he's just like, I'm like this one scene with, Aquaman with his whiskey going out and all of a sudden it's like a whiskey commercial or something with his
with the body flashing,
and it looks almost ridiculous, but Zack Snyder, I'm just gonna fucking go for it. I don't care. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. This is like so bombastic that it's almost ridiculous. And even, and I guess that plays into your question about the CGI, that if some of it didn't look quite real, it was so much like altered reality comic bookiness that I was never taken out of it. I mean, in the original with Henry Cavill's, they had the CGI out his mustache. That I was like, I can't even focus on anything else but his upper lip right now. But I never felt like that during this movie. Why did you think it was cheesy or something?
No, I was just going to say, I didn't think it was any better or worse than the original, you know, and anything that, like you just said, anything I saw that seemed a little goofy or whatever, it never took me out of the suspension of disbelief. You know, I was all in.
For sure. Me too. I mean, I didn't have any problems with it. And even if I think I did, I think it would fit with this, you know, I mean, it's a comic book movie. It's over the top. It's spectacular. Mm-hmm. It, you know, all these fight scenes are so, you know, you get so engrossed in it that, yeah. Yeah. No. It flowed. It worked.
I noticed it was filmed in like a, was it 4x3? Because it didn't close appear as widescreen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did that because he wanted to film it for mostly IMAX, and that's the ratio, and they let him keep that for the HBO Max. And that's one thing that I was curious. Okay, I'll give this a shot, see if I like it. But I think I prefer widescreen. That's
I understand that, you know, I think he did it that way. So if they did put it into widescreen, they would have had to, you know, cut some of the scenes a little
top
bit
and bottom. Yeah.
Yeah. We have our friend, I don't know if you saw, if you're on Corey's email list, but Corey ended up,
he forced it into widescreen. Yeah. Which is he totally forced something it. Into, he would do.
Yeah, exactly.
Figured out how to do it.
But I think he said that it didn't lose much.
One huge improvement visually to me was, and character wise too, but we'll get into more of that later. The villain Steppenwolf, they redid his look, and I thought it was really cool. His like shimmery, like almost feathered armor that kept,
it was like alive.
Yeah. It looked great.
It was like Iron Man suit.
Yeah. Comparing that to the old one. I mean,
the old one was so dull.
He looked like a buffoon in his old uniform. It looks so stupid. And then, now he has this like armor that's badass. Spiked and it's so much better. Oh my gosh.
Totally. Okay. Let's get into our top three. Dan, want to go first?
Sure. I'll start with my third. I like the Flash character. I like the way he was kind of, even though he was, you know, had this super power that is like one of the most, you know, powerful things you can have. It was just kind of humble about it. And he was even kind of had a low self-esteem, and it was just kind of, I liked the way they humanized him in general. And he was kind of my favorite character.
Yeah.
He was like the voice of the fan.
He was pretty funny too.
Yeah. It was, yeah.
He was. Yeah. I was, especially in the original movie, I was a little annoyed because the Flash in the comics is nothing like that. So they basically just made a new character and gave him the Flash's powers. But in this one, they cut down on some of his goofy jokes because there were more in the original because it was Joss Whedon. And the ones that he did say were mostly pretty funny, I thought. And also, the other ones are mostly pretty grim and serious, so they needed somebody to offset
light
that.
Things up.
So yeah. I actually liked him a lot more. I had liked him in this one, and I was expecting to be annoyed by him again, but I wasn't.
So was the girl that he saved with all those wieners floating around his head. That was pretty funny.
That was awesome. That
was that his future girlfriend, or was that significant in any way? Or
yes, yeah. That's Iris West, who's a character in the comics and in the CW show, who becomes a girlfriend. And I think there's a Flash movie coming out next year with this guy Ezra Miller, and I think she's in it too.
Cool.
Can I ask a question about this movie?
Of course.
No.
Like I was wondering, is this like set in a world where people know that are just okay with superheroes and they just know that that exists, or is this
It's basically the third movie.
I see.
The first one is Man of Steel when Superman arrives, and at that point they don't know any superheroes.
Okay.
And then there's a big battle over Metropolis where Superman just kills a bunch of people on accident.
Pisses off Batman.
And then, the opening of Batman versus Superman, which is the second one, you see Bruce Wayne running around going, shaking his fist at the sky.
Martha! And so,
like when Superman was in one of those dream sequences walking towards Batman with this angry look on his face, like, I'm going to kill you. I was thinking Batman should say, my mom's name is Martha. My mom's name is Martha.
Safe word. Martha,
Martha, Martha. But anyways, the Batman versus Superman was the second one. And that had Batman and Superman and this monster called Doomsday that killed Superman at the end of it. That's why he was dead.
And in the comic book world,
and Wonder Woman was in that one too.
Yeah, and the whole world mourns that the death of Superman, so everyone knows about him.
Yeah,
because they couldn't really tell. Like at times, it felt like people knew about superheroes and they were just part of society, and then other times they were just totally blown away that someone had a superpower. Like like you would be if it actually happened in a society where they didn't exist.
I mean, I think it's the beginning, so they know of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And they know there's some bad guys that came, but they don't know about anybody else.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think you would still be pretty shocked if you'd heard of Superman and all of a sudden he's, blowing cars up right in front of you.
Right. It's like if you walked in your bathroom and Beyonce was in there and she's like, excuse me.
Whoa.
Whoa. Hey.
She does exist.
Okay. Eric.
Okay, let me see. I liked, for I guess my third one would be, just how much they fleshed out Cyborg. I think that was a big thing that they were lacking in the first one.
Huge
thing. I mean, of course they had the time to do it, but giving him his backstory and his motivation and the struggle he was having with his father just totally made his character way more personable and way more real.
I agree. I think he may be my favorite just because he's so new, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued by him for a few reasons. One, because he's it's almost like he's fighting to keep his humanity. And not just be a machine. And it's almost eerie the way he is. He's so steely and he has all this knowledge, I have more than you can even imagine. And his one red eye moves
kind of independently.
No, it's not independent, but still it's like just one red eye. And
Okay.
Yeah. And it's the way they showed his powers where he can hack any computer and he gave that woman who it showed her, I think, being evicted from her apartment and she only had $12 in the bank, and he just raised it up to 100,000. It's just cool. He can manipulate the world economy. It said he could launch the world's entire nuclear arsenal with a thought, and he can change his arms into different like pulse blasters or whatever. It's just cool. He's super cool. Yeah. And then to show the motivation. And I think in the comic, he gets hurt in a football accident.
Yeah.
They kind of did a little switch on us. That ended up being a triumphant moment. I thought I was waiting for him to get sacked or something.
Oh, right.
And then he looks up and he sees that his father's not there. And then when you're not expecting anything to happen after that, when he's in the car with his mom, he gets hit.
And then
the whole sequence with his father, where it reveals that he hid the mother box for himself and used it to, save his son. And that whole sequence was just kind of horrific almost, but it was so cool.
And it tied into the end, you know, the fact that he was kind of created by it, you know, made that much more sense.
Yeah. And without him, they couldn't have won.
Right.
They
needed exactly. Him. Yeah.
So yeah
it was totally
way cool.
That was one of my highlights too, with Cyborg. They didn't do much with him in the original, theatrical release. So it was almost like he was brought to my attention, right? Because I wasn't really that familiar with Cyborg. So like you said, Eric, his origin story was fascinating, I thought.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't know he was just a kid. I mean, he was still in high school, right?
Yeah.
So he's obviously devastated at the loss of his mother and his old life, his humanity, like Jason said. And we didn't get much of that in the theatrical release at all. So his character was so much more fleshed out.
Another good thing, and I was probably going to say this later, but they got rid of the booyah. Oh my gosh.
I didn't want to go back and watch the original again because I wanted it all to be fresh. I was like, should I, so I can see what the differences are, but nah. And so I've forgotten a lot of it. I don't even remember that.
Well, so like so my kids love Teen Titans, and I do too. It's a fun, silly cartoon, but that's like his catchphrase in Teen Titans. But Teen Titans is just silly. It has really nothing to do with comics, and he runs around saying booyah all the time.
Oh, so they said it.
And they added it in the original version. It's just, and it was just so stupid. Yeah.
The actor for that, Kari Payton, he plays a character in The Walking Dead. So he would come to the Walker Stalker conventions.
Oh, cool.
And we would combine those with heroes and villains. And so we had the actor that played Cyborg in the Justice League there. I forget, Ray Fisher, I think is his name.
Yeah, Ray Fisher.
So they had a photo op where you could get the two cyborgs, you know.
Oh, together.
And I tried to get a panel with both of them, but Ray Fisher didn't want to do it for some reason. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, speaking of Ray Fisher, I thought he did a good job because throughout the entire movie, the Cyborg had this underlying emotional sadness and anger at the world, you know. And I thought Ray did a good job at keeping that consistent through the whole movie. It was pretty cool. Till the very end when he's like, you know, I am who I am.
Yeah. Cyborg came into the comics with the Teen Titans. So he was a Teen Titan with Robin and Aqualad and Kid Flash. So most of the Teen Titans at first were just the kid versions of the other heroes. But then they brought in some new people like Beast Boy, and Cyborg came in. Raven. They always, for the Justice League, they changed the members around a lot. And the main seven were, let's see, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Martian Manhunter was actually one of the founding Justice League members. But then they took out Martian Manhunter and put Cyborg in, and they wanted to really elevate him as a top tier character. That was like 10 or 15 years ago now. And so that's why you've been seeing a lot more Cyborg.
Yeah, I thought his powers were the best. I mean, like, if I could pick one of the superheroes to be, I think it would be Cyborg.
He's
way more relevant right now than he was when he was first introduced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do whatever you want, man. You could do it under the radar too, like anonymously. You know, you wouldn't have to let people know.
I'd just be using that bank account trick.
You'd be the ultimate Robin Hood. Yeah. And if the world pisses you off, you could just shut the whole damn planet down.
Just turn it all off.
Stone Age.
Don't make me mad. All right. Number three. Okay. My number three is just that it's a better movie than the original. And I'm going to go through some of the differences between the two. No Darkseid in the first one.
Gosh.
And Darkseid is an awesome character in DC Comics, created by Jack Kirby, who helped Stan Lee create the Marvel Universe and then went over to DC. I think Stan Lee pissed him off or something and created all these guys, Steppenwolf, Desaad, and all these little, like, the boom tubes that they use to transport themselves. Mm-hmm. And it all comes from Kirby's head. And so it was so cool to see Darkseid, right?
Yeah.
He's a cool villain, dude.
So I was a big fan of the cartoon, and I was in a
You mean Super Friends or Justice
League? That, of course,
Warner Brothers Justice League, animated version,
and one of my favorite episodes was when Superman and Darkseid finally face off. I think it was at the end of the series, which was
punching
unfortunate.
The fuck out of each other.
But they showed even his Omega Ray.
Which is cool because it goes at right angles.
Yeah, it just follows you wherever it goes. I was hoping that you got to see that, but
we did. No,
I like in battle and because
you see him in one of the visions. It's not actually true. He's skewering, I think it's Aquaman or an Atlantean, and then his beams come out and kill the one behind him.
I was like, Omega Beam!
And in the comic, not in the comic, but in that Justice League, I remember when Batman dodges it. He says, amazing.
Impressive.
No one has ever dodged the Omega Beam.
And then he was going to shoot Lex Luthor, and Lex Luthor ran. And he's like, good strategy.
In the original, Steppenwolf was just a generic villain who just wanted to conquer and had no motivation.
Yeah, there was
no
reason for him to do what he did.
Here, he somehow betrayed Darkseid, but we don't know why. But now he's trying to regain his approval, and he's just, you know, Darkseid seems almost like a father figure to him. Like, even when he sees Darkseid, his armor retracts, like he's, you know, in deference to him. Mm-hmm. So it's not that much more story, but it still made a big difference to me.
It's enough to, like, give him reason that he wasn't just
and have a little relatability too.
Right.
Yeah.
Gave him a little bit of backstory.
Superman's story was lighter in the 2017 version. We didn't get the black suit, which I think is really cool, the black suit, because that's famous for when Superman died in the comics and then came back and he was in this black suit. The whole Henry Cavill mustache, just quickly, they had to do reshoots in the original movie, but he was filming Mission Impossible 6, I guess, where he had a big mustache and he was contractually bound to keep it. So they had to CGI it out, and they did a shitty job because they didn't have any time.
That's so dumb. Why didn't they just shave it off and then have more of a prosthetic later?
They wouldn't let him do it. But you know what I was reading today that they should have done? Because in the comic, when Superman comes back from the dead, he has a beard. So they should have just given him a beard to go with the mustache.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. He would have looked even more badass.
I know. All new music. Danny Elfman scored the 2017 version. I actually don't remember if that was any good. I like Danny Elfman, but I like the music here pretty for the most part. Except there's really distinct music that they use for Superman from the Man of Steel movie, and really distinct music they use for Wonder Woman from her movies. And it was starting to take me out of it because it was so pronounced.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say something about that, but every time Wonder Woman would come on and they would play that. Right. I liked it, but, you know, every single time she jumped on screen, I thought that was a little
much. You
could
almost picture someone pressing. Oh, there she is. Press the button.
Yep. Yeah.
I was a little on fence about the music too, especially when they introduced the characters and they put that sappy, almost like love song music to the characters. But in the end, I decided it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, mostly I liked it. The opening, like you mentioned, Rich, made it make more sense what happened. Superman's death triggered the mother boxes. I mean, it's all just sort of comic book logic, but at least they gave a reason.
Yeah.
They took out a bunch of jokes, which I feel like they left enough jokes to still make it, you know,
good. One of the big ones that they removed that I was happy about was when Flash tripped and fell onto Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that one, but
there was also a Wonder Woman ass shot from
Yeah.
Whedon's version. And it's so, like, don't do that. Come on.
Supposedly Gal Gadot did not want to do that. And I don't know if they CGI'd it or something, but he trips and is like, ooh, and then lands on top of her. And I was like, oh, I'm glad they removed that.
Yeah. There was a scene where Wonder Woman, where Aquaman starts saying things that are kind of embarrassing. Yeah. And you're like, what is he saying? And you realize that he's touching Wonder Woman's lasso and doesn't realize it, and he's compelled to tell the truth. I remember laughing at that, but yeah. I don't know if it would have fit in this movie. Let's see. The final battle change. I mean, they extended all the battle scenes and added more. The whole scene with Flash applying for a job and saving Iris wasn't in there. The Aquaman and Willem Dafoe scene is new. Way more cyborg. No Martian Manhunter in the original. There's profanity. Cyborg says, fuck the world. And Batman says to Joker, I will fucking kill you. I only have a couple more. No Joker and no post-apocalyptic dream sequence. No ending race between Flash and Superman to find out who's the fastest man alive. And there's more, but...
I think a big one was the whole fear thing. And yeah. I'm so glad that they removed that the parademons fed on fear. I mean, that was just silly. And having Steppenwolf in the first film, you know, die by the parademons eating him, I just thought was ridiculous. Like his own minions would just, dumb.
Here, Aquaman skewers him from behind, and then just for good measure, Wonder Woman chops his head off.
That was there you go. 10 times better. Yeah.
When he goes flying through the interdimensional boom tube hole or whatever, and you just see Darkseid and his minions over on the other side, you know, with a face off of the Justice League, I was like, awkward. It just seemed funny. Like, oh, look, there's the bad guy. But clearly what was going to happen if Zack Snyder got to continue his vision was there would be a battle between Superman and Darkseid at some point.
Yeah. Right. Unless Lois dies.
Yep. Then Superman just decides to become a total evil person who kills everyone.
And waste the planet.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got for that one. Let's move on to number two, Dan.
Let's see. Yeah. The other thing I liked, I guess you could call it a highlight. It was just in general about this movie is that, I like the way the superheroes, everybody shined, and there wasn't like a clear leader. It was kind of like a horizontal leadership for the team. And everybody got, like, if it wasn't for one, like everybody had a key piece in saving the world. And I thought that was really cool. I'm kind of anti-hierarchical systems. And so I thought that was really cool that there really was no hierarchy. There was no like clear chief. I mean, I guess if you had to say somebody, because it would be Batman because he organized the whole thing. But really everybody was a key player, and he was just kind of the facilitator. So I liked that a lot.
So you wouldn't have liked it if at the end they would have been like, oh, I guess we didn't need Aquaman. Oh, well. Like, he didn't do anything.
Well, I guess that's a good point.
You're right.
What did he do? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, no, I'm not trying to say he didn't do anything. For one thing, when they were down under the tunnels and the Gotham Harbor was crashing down,
he came in and saved everybody. Right. Yeah. So that's what I felt like. I was thinking throughout the movie, I was thinking, okay, this is going to be the main hero, but then another superhero would do something that was just as heroic. And then, so I really liked that a lot, how it was, you know, equality among them.
It was a team effort.
Yeah. It was a true team effort. And I feel like that's kind of a good societal example of how things should work.
Yeah. It's like they were some sort of league out for justice or something.
Okay, Eric.
Me. Okay. You know, the battle scenes were just so cool, and you know, Zack Snyder definitely has a knack for that. I mean, you can see that in some of his other movies, but when he puts together a fight scene, I think they're all really cool. But the when the Amazons were defending the Mother Box and had that whole system set up where, you know, the tunnels and breaking the barriers to drop the walls. I thought that whole fight scene was just awesome. Well, he was almost about to grab it and they pull it away from him, and then he has to jump out and he's smashing horses and getting shot with arrows.
The Amazons were like, just close us in, we'll sacrifice ourselves, basically.
Yeah.
And then it falls into the sea for some reason. I'm not sure why. But then you see that the parademons come flying up and like, ah, oh, fuck, that didn't work. So it was exciting.
But yeah, it was cool. I thought that whole thing was cool when they were, you know, shooting arrows and destroying stuff.
Why? I'm not familiar with the Amazon lore, but how come they're using like sticks and stones? Why didn't they have like weapons and stuff? Are they... Do they shun that kind of stuff on their island?
They use bows and arrows.
I know, but like, you know, Batman has all his toys and six satellites. How come they didn't have at least a gun or something?
One of them has a gun, but they don't bring it out except for emergencies.
Just like a flare gun.
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I don't know either for sure, but they've been around for thousands of years and they've been separate. So they're on their own islands, you know, and they're separate from the world of man. So yeah, I think that's probably why they don't trade. They kind of still live the old ways. But yeah, and also it's cool, you know, it's like another member of the Justice League in the comics is the Green Arrow, who uses a bow and arrow, and it's so stupid. Like, why is this guy with a bow and arrow who has no powers on a team with Superman? But it's comics, and it's kind of fun to see different kinds of people, I guess. Where are we, Rich?
I'm gonna go with the Martian Manhunting.
Martian Manhunter.
When I'm doing my top three highlights, right? They are derived from when I'm watching a movie, events that make me go, whoa, or cool, or what? And that's what happened when I saw Martian Manhunter. I was like his first appearance when he was pretending to be Martha Kent. Yeah. And his eyes started glowing and I was like, what? And then it was clear, certainly a brief moment. And then here he is. I kind of wish he had that big chin. He didn't have that big chin, but that's all right.
That was a complete violation of Lois Lane's trust, by the way, and totally creepy and emotionally manipulative.
I was wondering why he did that. I mean,
he wanted to get her back to work for some
reason.
Here's
my theory.
Lois's key had something to do with that, right?
And I think this goes back to maybe his character in the comics and in the Warner Brothers animation movies. But he's like hanging out in the background. He's chilling in the background, watching everything go down. He's super brilliant, right? He's got this genius IQ. And so he's just piecing it all together and kind of like lining up the chess pieces, so to speak, so that the Justice League can win and everybody and the world is saved, right? Because we all know that Lois can't die now. And so he's kind of, making for all that to kind of happen behind the scenes.
Yeah. I didn't quite figure out how to make the connection, but I think the idea was that somehow him getting her to go back to work put her in the right place so she would be there when Superman came back to life or something.
He's just aligning things up.
He pretended to be Martha and was like, yeah, it's really sad about my farm.
When they were together, when she goes to see Martha later, it's like,
like, you know, you really made all the difference that talk we had. It just turned my life around.
What are you talking about? I like that he showed up, but I was a little disappointed that he wasn't in it more.
Yeah. Well, he's intended for the sequel, clearly, because at the end, he said we need to find the anti-life equation before Darkseid does.
Right.
When Ben Affleck suddenly was like 20 pounds thinner for some reason. No, he bulked up for Batman, but this.
Oh, right. For the epilogue.
Martian Manhunter. Yeah,
he didn't quite fit.
Clearly years later, but that's all right.
But that in itself made me like the movie even that much better.
I was stoked to see him and Green Lantern in that battle from thousands of years ago.
One of the Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking maybe current day Green Lantern might show up at the end. And unfortunately, the whole image of Green Lantern has been tainted by the Ryan Reynolds movie, but I love that. I've always loved the Green Lantern and want them to do it right.
I think I read that he was thinking about adding him and that the studio exec said no, because I can't remember if there was that they had different plans for Green Lantern, something like that.
not putting him in the movie.
Right.
Where are we? I'm lost again. It's my turn.
Yeah,
your turn.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about some of my favorite parts. I think my favorite part was when Diana told Bruce about when Darkseid first tried to conquer the Earth, which is cool because she's like 5,000 years old. And
yeah,
so her mom was there fighting, but it was Darkseid coming to Earth and all the defenders of the Earth, the old Greek gods, the Atlanteans, human men, and maybe women. I'm not sure. And who else? The Amazons. And we see Zeus flinging his lightning at people.
Yeah.
So cool.
And his son, Ares.
Ares, god of war. Artemis. And the Atlantean king, who looks like a kingly version of Aquaman with his orange armor. That Green Lantern I mentioned. All these other warriors. That's when we first saw Darkseid too. Right. And I was like, I knew he was going to be in this, but I didn't know he would have such an active role, considering I thought this would just be recut and with a little extra footage. But his fighting in this was glorious. The whole fight was just freaking amazing. Ares and, I think, chops into Darkseid's throat.
Yeah. They kicked his butt.
Yeah.
That was
bring cool. back the running. Old gods. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was really cool.
Continuing on with just favorite parts, all the battles were cool. The one you mentioned with Amazonians, the Wonder Woman taking care of the terrorists at the museum was pretty cool.
I love that. I mean, those are the kind of moments that I wanted to see in the Wonder Woman movies. And
yeah. What else? The fight underground in Gotham with Flash, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Cyborg versus Steppenwolf and the Parademons, and Batman crawler. Brought in that like spider crawler thing.
Yeah.
That was super cool. Then even Superman fighting the rest of the Justice League was pretty cool. Although that seemed a little like fudge, like, oh, here we have Cyborg. All of a sudden his armor acts on its own because
I had a problem with danger, that too.
And it's never done that before.
Yeah. Or since.
The final battle with Superman finally in on the action was awesome, and just seeing Batman in action in this movie was super cool. All of that, so cool. All the Cyborg stuff that we already talked about was some of my favorite parts of the movie, but I won't go over that again. And the Cyborg dream sequence when he's waking the box to revive Superman, and all of a sudden you see this wave go over the planet Earth and it looks like it's being turned into a post-apocalyptic world, and you see Wonder Woman in a casket, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? Looks like the whole world just got destroyed.
What happened?
I should have known it was a dream sequence, but I was like, oh, whoops, I guess that didn't work. So the that end. Caught me off guard. Yeah, it is just black for the rest of the 2 hours. Flash saving the girl was cool. And just like the $6 million series, that old 70s series, you know he's running really fast because he's in slow motion. And I asked Bodhi, is he running fast or slow? And he goes, slow. So what else? And then a couple of villain things. I'm almost done, I promise. The mother boxes, I thought for a box looked really cool, the way they're all active
all
and
like alive, a and
creepy puzzle. Yeah, like it kind of reminded me of Hellraiser.
Oh yeah.
And the sounds are even cool, like, rah, 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 like otherworldly. And I love the communication system between the villains, where it looked like a big slab of metal, but it would get hot and take on the form of whoever he was communicating with, almost like a hologram. But I think it was actually just took on the shape of like Darkseid or Desaad. And then the last thing I have is just the Parademons. I think they're really cool. The concept that they're kind of like zombies, the worlds that they've conquered, the people turn into Parademons. And I like that their wings flutter like flies.
Was that in the theatrical release? Because that was a good explanation on what Parademons were. I didn't know before.
I can't remember. Yeah.
I don't think so.
That was that whole fear theme that he added. That there was a scene where Batman had to capture one, and he captured a Parademon to figure out that it fed on fear. And there was a whole other scene where when Steppenwolf was building his base at that nuclear site, that there was a family that was afraid, and it, you know, drew the parademons in. Just another thing that was removed that absolutely should have been.
Nice.
Before you go to your next one, Dan, I just wanted you to know, you did get me thinking about that, because if you had asked me who the leader was, I would have just said Batman. But when you really think about it, once he got them all together, they were all kind of equally respected, except maybe the Flash, because he's so demure, but he turned out to be a key player. But yeah, like Batman wasn't going to be ordering people around. It was like a, you know, they all had to decide together.
It felt like to me a lot of the well-run activist groups, when there's not a leader, but there's a facilitator that does things, but they make a point not to be the person that tells everybody what to do.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
But it was kind of funny when Aquaman kept being like, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't bring Superman back. And Flash is like, we got to try. Come on, we got to try. And then after Superman came back and attacked them all and then left with Lois, and then the camera goes to Flash and Aquaman. They're kind of embedded in the steps because they've cracked, you know, he's thrown them through. And Aquaman looks over with a scowl and just points at Flash. And he goes, I am so sorry.
That's cool.
All right, Dan, number one.
Actually, I already talked about my number one, I guess, but the catering to the comic book crowd, I like that a lot. I like that it was that they didn't, you know, cater to the mainstream, and that it's kind of a brave thing to do, I think, with movies, to kind of jump out of a formulaic. You know, obviously it's a superhero movie. There's plenty of formulaic aspects to it, but they really didn't try to, they didn't try and play it safe. They really took a risk and went for what their niche audience would like, I thought. And actually I thought even though the character, it was a 4-hour movie, and the characters were way better developed in the first one, I guess. I think they could have been developed even more. And that's why I think it should have been a TV series. I think they could have had 8 episodes, and, you know, 1 or 2 episodes could have been, you know, just concentrating on one character at a time. I really like the storyline aspect of it, and the fact that it was, that they didn't shy away from that at all. That was my favorite thing about it.
I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe did it right. They started with an Iron Man movie, and then they had Hulk, and then I don't know what came after that.
That's right.
Thor
probably.
Yeah.
And
First Avenger.
Yeah, Captain America. And so, I mean, basically the Marvel Cinematic Universe is like a big TV show. And so each one of these is like an episode focusing on a different character. And then by the time they got around to the Avengers movie, they had movies on a lot of them already. So you knew them and then you're like, yeah, getting all these guys that I love together. And DC's like, oh, look at Marvel. They're totally running away. Just get the Justice League movie out as quick as you can.
They threw it together.
Yeah.
Hey, Eric, did Bria and Tyler watch it?
No. I mean, I was kind of watching it on the computer while they were doing school, and Tyler would look over and see scenes here and there. But yeah, no, they haven't.
Yeah. You got me thinking about that now too, Dan, because my kids, which are adults now, they didn't seem that interested in it either. So, well, yeah, maybe they really were just catering to DC comic book nerds. They did have a lot of fan service in there.
I showed them some specific scenes that I thought were cool, and they enjoyed them. Now, whether they could sit down and watch a 4-hour movie, I don't know if they're quite ready for that, regardless of what it is.
Nico, who's 9, he doesn't care about any parts of any superhero movie that's not fighting. So I had him come in and watch battles, but which he loved. And then as soon as talking started, he just left.
I can relate.
Yep. Absolutely.
My kid liked it a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Dan has a goat.
His 4-legged kid. Yeah.
All right, Eric.
We kind of already touched on mine as well. Well, sort of. I mean, you did. The Wonder Woman, you know, that whole intro of her taking out those terrorists, it was just so cool. And it was just something that I was missing in most of her other films and stuff, but her blocking the bullets with her, her bracers and, you know, taking out those guys.
Slamming them together to create.
It was just so awesome. I mean, those fight scenes really, really got to me and are just so fun to watch. Like,
she ropes this guy, pulls him up. Who are you? We're a group of terrorists who are, you know, da, da, da. She goes, boring. Why? Asks another question.
I love these kinds of movies where they introduce the characters and then along with the characters, kind of their abilities and superpowers, you know?
Right.
It goes anywhere from these superhero movies to Predator to the Expendables, you know? It's like, here's John, you know, he's very rare. They're so cool.
But then actually getting to see them do their stuff and do it well.
Yeah.
And, you know, see what Wonder Woman is really capable of or any of those guys. And it's just awesome.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. I really love that scene. I almost put it in one of my top three.
Blocking the bullet.
Yeah.
And then at the end with the little girl.
Yeah.
Who's like, can I be like you someday? And she's like,
no.
Like, you can be anything you want. And I'm like, except don't give me. Her false hopes. Jesus Christ. Nobody can be
you. I showed Bria and Tyler that scene and they loved it. And I also made that joke when the little girl said, could I be like you? No.
No, but you can, you know, do all right for yourself.
Yeah. You can work out.
You can have a great life.
No, but I still like that moment though, even though you probably shouldn't have given her false hope. Okay. Now it's Richard's turn.
Well, mine was the action, obviously. I'm just like your kids, watch the action and I could walk away for the rest of it. But in this case, the whole movie was pretty much awesome. And, pretty much Jason, what you said, you know, my favorite scene was that one where they introduced Darkseid and they had the old gods fight him and all the Amazons and the Atlanteans and the humans. And I thought that was probably my favorite part of the whole movie. The other favorite part too was when they brought back Superman and he had to fight, couldn't remember who he was, and he fought the four Avengers. That was pretty cool. I laughed out loud.
The Avengers showed up, but yeah. Justice
League. I laughed out loud when he had Wonder Woman, Cyborg, and he was holding them all at bay, you know, and Aquaman, and then the Flash started running behind him, and then he slowly starts looking at the Flash.
Yeah.
The cool thing about that.
Yeah, that's right. He's got super speed, too.
They didn't even budge him an inch. I mean, I just know how powerful he is. He did not even move and was able to hold all them.
It was cool because the Flash was like, how are you doing that?
Yeah. It was like super surprised. But the scene with Wonder Woman in the bank, and there was definitely more blood. I mean, she was smashing heads and breaking backs. It was like no joke.
Yeah, right.
Right. That's because our society has become completely infantilized now, so they can make these movies for us man boy adults. We don't have to make it for kids.
Kill.
Yeah, then lastly of special note was I think you did mention this too, Jason, was Batman. You know, he was kind of like the organizer and the facilitator, like you said, Dan, and then he was always kind of in the background. He did a little bit when they were rescuing the hostages, but he really got to shine in the final battle. I mean, he was taking out all of those parademons. He had his bat jet and then he got in his bat car. I mean, he had all the, he pulled out all the bat gear. Parademon repellent. Yeah, right. Get the bat parademon repellent rubbing.
Ben Affleck was gonna be Batman, I was like, what? I hate Ben Affleck, but he's a fucking awesome Batman, I think.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I don't know. He was good. He didn't.
You know, I dig him. I wish that he was supposed to do a standalone Batman movie that he was going to direct, and then I think Ben Affleck just was having a bad time in life and bowed out. But I would have liked to have seen that.
I definitely liked his character in this movie better than the theatrical release, that's for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But I thought he was the best thing in Batman versus Superman.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time remembering that movie, but
I have to go with Super Spam all the time.
I mean, I think Henry Cavill is good and he's definitely got the physique, but I don't think he's got the acting chops that Ben Affleck has. I would have never said that before I saw these movies, but
I like Henry Cavill. I mean, just because he's a super geek in real life. I saw something about him building his own PC, and I'm like, hey, it's not fair, dude.
You know, you can't have all that and be right. Cool, yeah, dude.
Come right. On. Go back to Krypton. But he's great in The Witcher, though, I have to say.
Yeah.
You guys watch that? It's hard to get into, but once you get in, it's really
good. Lucy watched all of it. I tried to watch some of it. I couldn't.
Yeah. His pecs sustain those first couple of episodes for most women.
Pretty sure why Lucy made it. Just have her go in her room and shut the door.
This is so good.
This movie is...
Yes, I love this show. Hey, quiet down in there.
All right. It's my turn, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to get super geeky and just get into some explanations for some of the details, because I have to say, pretty much any TV show or movie I see, when I'm done watching it, I don't really know what happened until I watch it twice and do a podcast on it. So for this one, I like, why? Answer me this. Why is Batman even forming the Justice League? Do you guys know?
Because there's an evil coming from far away that's going to destroy the Earth.
How does he know that?
I don't know.
Exactly. So I didn't know either, but you're right, that is why. And it's because at the end of Batman versus Superman, Batman goes to Luther in jail and saying, you know, I'm gonna be watching you, whatever you do. And Luther says, look at us, this is how it all caves in, civilization on the wane, manners out the window. So he got Wayne Manners in there just to let him know that he knows who he is. Anyways, he's all, but who would believe me? I'm insane. I'm not even fit to stand trial. Batman's like, that's right, we have hospitals to treat mentally ill with compassion, but that's not where you're going. I've arranged for you to get a transfer to Arkham Asylum in Gotham. Then Luther says, but the bell's already been rung and they've heard it out in the dark among the stars. Ding dong, the god is dead. The bell cannot be unrung. He's hungry. He's found us and he's coming. Ding, 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 ding. And so it's that warning. Alfred says later, you know, it's been a while since Luther warned you and nothing's happened. But Batman's like, well, maybe they're already here or something. But then you're like, how did Luther know that? Well, there's a deleted scene from Batman versus Superman where he's in the Kryptonian ship and there's a hologram of Steppenwolf with those three mother boxes.
Oh.
But I noticed in Justice League, I think they put a little piece of that scene. So it's like in a flashback or something, you can see Luther. I mean, yeah, you know, Jesse Eisenberg getting that information. So that's how he knew.
There you go.
And then let's see. What are the mother boxes? Well, they're Darkseid. I'm a little confused. I think there's actually a plot hole, because it says when Darkseid first came and waged war on Earth in that awesome scene that we were talking about earlier, thousands of years ago, he found a secret and called for three mystics who worshiped the mother boxes, indestructible living machines made from science, so advanced it looks like sorcery. When they join together, they form the Unity, which cleanses a planet with fire, transforming it into the copy of the enemy's world. All who live become servants of Darkseid, alive, but drained of life, parademons. So it sounds like he discovered the mother boxes on Earth, but then we know they stayed on Earth and were asleep for 1,000 years until Superman's death woke them up. In the meantime, he also found the anti-life equation, or found out it was there. Right. Which I'll get into later. But then they defeated him and he went away and somehow didn't know where the Earth was.
Right.
Yeah. That's a plot hole. But also, right, he doesn't have the mother boxes. So how is he creating parademons? How is he conquering all these other Earths? He's going around conquering planets.
Steppenwolf even says something about that, right? When he is taking it from the Amazonians, that you know, defenders have tried to stop us on 1,000 other worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, and Desaad tells Steppenwolf, ones? You owe him 50,000 worlds because of what you did. So it's clear that he's been going around conquering other worlds, but he doesn't have the mother. Maybe there's other mother boxes.
I remember in the cartoon that they had set up these big converter stations or something that would like mess with the planet's structure and pull out all the lava and make it like Apocalypse. But I don't know if they just replaced those with the mother boxes. But they had some sort of system that would transform the planet. It didn't necessarily turn its inhabitants into parademons, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Right. But what we know for sure is that Darkseid wants to conquer the universe. And he discovered that this anti-life equation is on the Earth, and he's been looking for the Earth again to get it. And what the anti-life equation does is it lets him control all life. So basically, he just would have control in the multiverse, I think Desaad says. And so that's what he's trying to do. Steppenwolf is like, wait, this is the planet. It's here. And so Darkseid tells him, okay, then if you bring these three mother boxes together into the Unity, that's how it translates into transforms the Earth into a hellscape that's just like Darkseid's home planet, Apocalypse. Then he'll come and claim his prize, which is the anti-life equation, which will let him have control over the whole, all of everything.
They could have just a warehouse supply of parademons from their previous conquerors. You know, maybe they were just using those.
But I mean, if they found the mother boxes on Earth and then he got kicked off of Earth and didn't take them with him, then there's no time in that timeline where he has those mother boxes somewhere else to conquer the planet and create the parademons.
I was assuming they brought the mother boxes with them.
They didn't. They were hidden. The Atlanteans hid one.
When they fought the gods.
Yeah, but they say in the movie is while he was there conquering this planet, he discovered these three mystics who worship these mother boxes. And so it's made it sound like he found them on Earth.
That would be a major plot hole.
Maybe I misunderstood. I'm not sure.
I did kind of find it funny. That the three, after they defeated that, you know, Darkseid and they all left, the Atlanteans took their box and they put it in this, you know, chamber, and they have all these guards, and, you know, the Amazonians take it and they put all these defense mechanisms, and then the humans go,
how about if we bury ours? And they'll never find it in the ground here.
A shallow grave.
Let's just dig a hole. Well, they'll never find it.
And then they forget about it. But yeah, the thing is, that was the hardest one to get.
Yeah, I know.
And that's only because the Justice League was there to defend it.
Right.
And then what else? The alien ship. I was like, what's that? Well, because I forgot about the other movies, but I think it's a Kryptonian ship that Superman used for his Fortress of Solitude. And it was a scout ship that came to Earth thousands of years ago and was abandoned for some reason. And then I think during Man of Steel, Kal-El found it. And then General Zod used it against him. And then in Batman versus Superman, Luthor broke in and used the technology in the ship to create Doomsday out of Zod's corpse. And then in this movie, Justice League uses the ship's technology combined with the mother boxes to bring Superman back to life. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that about mother box, too. It says it changes matter and it can reinstate dissipated matter. And that's how they figure out
how
they can use it to bring Superman back to life.
It was a nice little chemical reactions lesson there.
But the reason they needed to take it to the Kryptonian ship is because the ship knows about Kryptonian biology, so it can communicate with the box and tell it what form is correct. Yeah, how to rebuild him. Comic book logic. And then the dream sequence at the end. So this whole, there's peppered throughout this whole series is just warnings about Superman. In Batman versus Superman, there's a scene where it's a dream sequence where Batman's in this post-apocalyptic world wearing trench coat and goggles. And he's trying to, I think, get some kryptonite, but it's a trick. And there's parademons that fly in, and there's these soldiers like that look like Nazis, but they have Superman's S's on them. And so it's this alternate future where Superman's become evil and taken over. And right when he wakes up, the Flash comes through a portal, but it's like tenuous communication, but he's like, Bruce, listen to me. It's Lois Lane. She's the key. Am I too soon? You're right about him. You've always been right about him. Fear him. So he's saying Superman is dangerous. You need to, you know, watch out. And then in Cyborg's vision that I mentioned earlier, he sees Darkseid approaching a distraught Superman holding a corpse. And that's Lois. I think it's in the Batcave. And that's what the Joker's talking about at the end in that dream sequence with Bruce, that, oh, you let her die. You couldn't die yourself, you know, sacrifice yourself. So it's like there's some alternate reality where Lois died. And I guess then when Superman came back, because Lois wasn't there, he just stayed evil. Or maybe it's that Darkseid used the anti-life equation to control him, or somehow control him. But I don't know exactly how, but the idea is that there could be this future where Superman turns evil and the whole world's apocalyptic. And that was the plan for Justice League 2. It was going to be in this post-apocalyptic world where they had to
fight
Superman. Yeah.
I think there was a whole a cartoon, you know, with the Warner Brothers, you know, the Justice League. There was a whole series of episodes where I can't remember. I think it was an alternate reality where Superman was evil and he had his black, you know, his get up on, and the current Justice League has to go there for some reason. And I think, again, I think in that one, it was because Lois died and he just didn't care. You know?
I mean, this whole thing makes Lex Luthor seem pretty smart, because his whole thing was like, hey, we need to get rid of Superman because he's a danger.
Right.
It's like, yeah, he was right. just a couple more. Why is Diana stronger than the other Amazons? Do you guys know?
No, actually.
I'm pretty sure it's because she takes creatine. No, because
kale.
She's Zeus's daughter. I think that's why. And about Flash, either I wasn't clear if he reversed time or went back in time. But at some point, because Darkseid actually succeeded at the end, the mother box
is
combined, and he reversed time because he needed to inject his power into Cyborg so that he could be thrust into the Unity and separated into the three mother boxes. But Flash at one point says he connects to a layer of dimensional reality that seems to manipulate space-time, and he calls it the Speed Force. So. I was thinking, oh, maybe he's not actually fast, but he just like slows down time of everything around him so that he seems fast.
Well, right before he ran backwards in time, he said out loud, I need to run faster than the speed of light. Much faster than the speed of light. I'm thinking that's
another
impossible.
Another point to the cartoons was the Flashpoint Paradox. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but that one is awesome.
And that was a good one, yeah.
About Flash. And
that scene in this movie
break
with
the
him.
Speed Force.
That was cool. Every time he took a step, a little bit more was revealed. You know, he was reversing everything that got blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Ran past Superman, who kind of came back.
Yeah, because they're all like, you could see their blood in their
their
bodies. They all died. What else? Let's see. Oh, when the Joker says he knows very well what it's like to lose someone he loves, like a father, a mother, and an adopted son. That's a reference to there was this big thing in the comics where the second Robin, Jason Todd, had an annoying personality, and DC Comics put out these two phone numbers. Vote or call this number if you want him to live. Call this number if you want him to die. And 51% of the people called the die number. So they had a Joker bashing his skull in with a crowbar. And then,
but didn't that set off the whole Batman versus Superman thing, that after Robin died, that he went on this rampage and Superman was sent to stop him? Or am I
in the comics?
Yeah,
I don't know for sure, but I know in Batman versus Superman, I think there's references to him having had a Robin, but he died. So that's what the Joker's needling him about.
Mm.
I had some questions too, but I think that's enough. There were some open questions about it, but that's all right. So, do you guys have any like random notes or anything?
Yeah, I got a few. People were really bad drivers in this movie. Barry's girlfriend got knocked out of her car. Victor's mom got killed. I mean, not unlike the real world.
I mean, it's funny because they had to show like origin stories, or at least just development with each individual one. So there's some just bad crap that happens around them all, like the museum or whatever it was getting accosted by terrorists while Wonder Woman's there.
Kind of scared.
Flash is just trying to get a job and there's cars flipping around outside.
I thought it was funny that people thought parademons and Batman looked the same. when they were given their descriptions.
That was a bit of a stretch.
Drew that kindergarten picture of Batman. It's like, really? People are bad eyewitnesses.
I thought it was a little silly that Batman didn't know Flash's abilities. I mean, the world's greatest detective has video evidence of him running super fast. And he's like, what do you do? What are you fast or something? Maybe.
So you're fast. And they kept saying, too, they couldn't find Steppenwolf's base. And then like Batman's like, I got six satellites and the best technology in the world. And you could probably see it from space because it's a giant glowing orb.
But we'll have to track it with your dead father.
Yeah. I like the Alfred scenes, too. I'm glad that Alfred was in it more.
He's great. Yeah. Jeremy Irons.
Yeah. He was filling in, you know, he was filling in a lot of the stories and backstory. And he was kind of playing the devil's advocate, too. So I liked his character. Did you guys catch the pregnancy test in Lois Lane's drawer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then at the end, when Batman was like, oh, by the way, congratulations to Superman. I think we might be having a super boy.
I'd be so nervous to be pregnant with Superman's baby. I know. If I was her. One busting kid. Right out of there.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe you don't want to let Lois die because she's pregnant with Superman's baby.
There you go. As long as he doesn't have asthma.
What?
That was a reference to the Brandon Roth Superman version where his son had asthma and didn't have any powers.
And he was a deadbeat dad and a peeping Tom.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You know, there was a whole on the CW, they have Flash show. They have a new Superman show that's pretty good.
I watched a couple episodes.
Green Arrow. And they had a whole crossover thing with Crisis on Infinite Earths that involves multiverse and stuff. And Ezra Miller showed up as the Flash talking to the CW version of the Flash for just one scene. Huh. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Superman was pretty brutal when he came back.
He's an asshole in this.
I was kind of like, I could have used a little more Superman. Yeah, because he was brutal. I mean, he came back, remembered who he was, and then I just felt disconnected with him because we didn't get to see a lot of what he was doing in the back there. But he went to Alfred, right? I supposedly Alfred filled him in on what was going on, and then he just shows up and like destroys Steppenwolf with a smile on his face. It's like, it doesn't seem like a supermanly thing to do, but it was pretty cool though.
I mean, in Man of Steel, when he's fighting Zod and they're punching each other through buildings and half of the buildings are just falling down, and you know, I think that's why Batman versus Superman started out with Bruce Wayne going, you're causing a lot of carnage here, because people said that after that movie, like, God, aren't you supposed to like watch out for people? Our friend Ben, who's been a host, guested on this podcast, he hates the Zack Snyder movies just because he feels like they ruined Superman. He's supposed to be noble, and here he's really careless with people. And I don't blame him. I kind of agree with that part of it. I think he's a little better in Justice League than he has been in the previous movies, but I don't know.
Is he supposed to be that way? Like after he comes back?
No. I don't understand why he he's confused and Cyborg shot at him, but I don't know.
Go to that extent.
Yeah.
Practically almost
like I'm confused, so I'm gonna kill you all.
Right.
I took it as like he was confused and scared, like he didn't even know his own powers or something, because he just like burst back, you know, like being born or something. You know, really know what's going on or what's happening, and you get defensive. And that's
but I was confused if the implication is that if Lois wasn't there, he would have just stayed evil. I hope not, because that's dumb.
I think.
Any other notes, Rich?
No, that's it.
Anybody else? Dan, Eric?
I have some stuff written down, but yeah, I think we covered most of it. I mean, and some of it are all just these little nitpicky things that I don't want to feel like I'm bashing on it that much.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you have anything that you think is, oh yeah, that'd be interesting to talk about, then
just little things. Like I was kind of annoyed that Flash kept getting shot, especially by some like parademon dude. He's running at the speed of light and some parademon shoots him. and he actually gets hit. Like, he couldn't dodge that. I mean, he
shot him with a laser blast. That doesn't even make sense if you're running faster than the speed of light.
Right. I was just thinking, maybe, I don't know if they intended this, but he's going in a circle, right?
Right.
So could you have a beam that intersects the circle that he runs into?
The whole time I was just thinking, wasn't everything for him just like slowing down, and he would see that beam coming
and coming, or something
coming, and he just doesn't do anything about it. And oops.
It's hard. I mean, I agree with you,
but at the same time, I understand that, you know,
It reminds me of The Walking Dead, where you have these dumb bumbling zombies that would totally be easy to circumvent, but they have to keep coming up with situations where they're a threat, and it's hard, you know?
Right.
But you're right, though.
And, well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, most of my little nitpicks, I understand why they're there and that they have to either move something along or add some tension or something. But at the same time, they're still just little nitpickies.
Yeah. Like the guy who was mopping the floor grates. That doesn't make very much sense. In the lab when the parademon broke in, he was mopping floor grates.
And you're like, what?
As much as I loved Cyborg, I did sort of think after a while, like, come on, give your dad a break. Like, you turned me into a monster. Well, he saved your life.
Exactly.
And now you have cool powers, so shut up.
That's a teenager for you. They don't know.
Okay, Dan, any other ones?
Well, I had kind of an observation. I don't know what you guys think. Like, is it? I mean, it was just totally obvious to me that the whole Darkseid character and Steppenwolf were just. I mean, they just totally reminded me of the Emperor and Darth Vader. So, like, it was like it seemed like a complete. And so, but I don't know if I don't like. I don't watch a lot of. I don't read a lot of comic books and stuff like that. And so maybe that's kind of a theme in general and. I'm relating it to Star Wars because that's, you know, everybody.
I
knows
think
Star
it's
Wars.
A common theme, right?
Where they came first.
Where there's a big baddie, and a big baddie has minions, and to get to the big baddie, you have to go.
It's like Skeletor and Beast Man,
right?
I don't know who that is.
He-Man.
Oh, right.
The toys that made us.
Yes, yes. Actually, I do remember those characters.
Skeletor.
Okay. The Flash movie I mentioned is supposed to have Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne / Batman and also Ben Affleck. So I guess it's a multiverse hopping.
I wonder where they got that idea.
I mean, these things go in tandem, but Marvel's doing that too. Like
Marvel's doing it, right?
Apparently, in Spider-Man, the third, what's the guy's name? Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Spider-Man movie, No Way Home. It's rumored to have Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, the previous two Spider-Men. Did you know that, Rich?
No.
Yeah. And Alfred Molina, who played Doc Ock, Willem Dafoe, who played Green Goblin, and Jamie Foxx, who played Electro in the Andrew Garfield ones.
That's badass. I like Alfred Molina. He's cool.
I mean, they've gotten to the point with these comic book movies where they can get into these more even geekier concepts and people will accept it. And it's directed by Sam Raimi. Oh, no, it's not directed by Sam Raimi, but Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Why would you do that to me?
Well, listen. There's a Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness coming out, which is directed by Sam Raimi.
Ooh, oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. Some funny lines I liked when Flash was standing around with Batman and Wonder Woman and the bat signal pops up. Oh, awesome. That's the bat signal. Oh, sorry. That's your signal. You have to go now. That's so cool. I love that Bruce Wayne had such trouble getting Aquaman to join and then the Flash is just like, stop right there. I'm in.
Yeah.
Before you dare to say anything.
I really like this character.
Flash says, what are your superpowers again?
Yeah.
I'm rich.
I'm rich.
He says, I'm a black hole of snacks. I'm a snack hole. And I liked when he was asking Aquaman which hat is better when they were going to sneak in to get the mother box. He goes, A. And Aquaman's like, definitely not A. Or B. And he goes, let me see A again. Because it was fun just to see Aquaman lighten. He seems like a fun guy. He played along. Flash goes, cross this one off the bucket list, exhume Superman from his grave. Check.
Right. At first I was like, how can you take Superman from his grave? There would be people there 24/7. Then I realized, yeah, oh, wait, it's Clark Kent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Good call, yeah. And although you'd think maybe somebody who knew the secret would, I don't know.
Let it spill.
But you're right, you're right. I noticed there's issues with parents that play a part in all their stories. Flash's dad's in jail for killing his mom. Wrongly convicted, though. Batman saw his parents murdered, of course. Superman's parents had to send him away from the dying planet, and he was raised by wholesome farmers. Wonder Woman's mother was a badass, but she lied and didn't tell her that her father was Zeus. Aquaman's mother was forced to abandon him at birth. I forget the story. That's all in the Aquaman movie, which I thought was dumb. But
you know what that means? It means none of us could ever be superheroes.
Yeah, because we have. Well, I could probably. My dad was a total asshole.
You could be an evil genius.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. Just to get a little, I don't know, a little more serious. That a lot of times I notice with people that are super driven, that they have some kind of a pain, and it's
some sort of
springs from that. You know, trying to overcome something or push against something.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I guess that's all I got. Well, it has a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know what the first one has, but it's definitely lower. And Richard Brody from The New Yorker says, it's a grind, it's a slog, it's a bore, it's a mental toothache of a movie whose ending grants not so much resolution as relief.
Oh, yeah, so are you.
But Kevin Smith said, if you haven't already, make some time to take in all four glorious hours of the one true Justice League this weekend. I watched this epic a week ago when I got a link at 1 a.m. I figured I'd peep the first half, hit the sack, then wake up to finish the rest in the morning. Instead, I went to bed at 5:30 a.m. after blazing through three joints while mainlining this splash page pretty miniseries of a movie. So happy for Zach. He's a super sweet guy who has survived personal and professional losses that would break me as a person. But through it all, this kind man kept smiling, even while forever fighting the darkness, something he does with his work on behalf of ASFP National. That's that suicide prevention thing. He's as brave and bold as the larger than life superheroes he makes films about. So I'm happy Zach's having a moment, which looks like it's going to continue with his Netflix heist movie, Army of the Dead, which I'm stoked about. Good man, epic filmmaker.
That's a much better review.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, it's 74, so there's a lot more good ones than bad ones in there, but I thought it'd be funny to read a bad one. All right, we'll take a little break. There's a little bit of feedback to come, so stay with us.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong.
Okay, we're back. It's time for some listener feedback. We didn't get much. I think it's because it's a 4-hour movie and people haven't had a chance to see it yet, but a few of you guys wrote in.
So Paul Williams said he absolutely loved it. Not a perfect movie, but a massive upgrade over the Whedon version.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that seems like what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Not me. I mean, I didn't think it was perfect, but I don't think any movie's perfect. But I thought it was damn good. I was like really into it. I don't know. Maybe my perception skewed for some reason. I definitely was thinking of it as a geeky comic book movie and wondering if anyone who wasn't a comic book geek like me would like it. But I thought it was spectacular.
Like, yeah, even with the flaws or the little, yeah, you know, imperfections here and there, I burned through it. It was 4 hours. I didn't even notice as you know, the time per se.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good.
I mean, and if you really like it, it's like, who cares what other people think?
Yeah.
Right, so
yeah. I liked it.
But I'm glad you liked it, Eric, because, you know, you're like me. We're both like, well, we didn't really like the other ones. But I was afraid you were just going to be like, nah.
My expectations were way low. And that helps. Definitely, yeah, I definitely thought that that might have helped. But at the same time, you know, I was looking for things to not like, and I was having a hard time finding them, and I was enjoying it.
Lucy was like, I don't want to sit down for 4 hours and watch this. And then after about the first 20 minutes, she was sitting right next to me. Nice. Next 3 hours and 40 minutes.
There you go. Okay, the next listener, Lisa Moreno, says, so good. I loved it. This was so well made. Can't wait to hear all you covered on the podcast.
She nice. Loves so, JLA, so I'm glad she liked it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. If she knows that well, I think she would be happy. I mean, there were a lot of little references, the anti-life equation and all that stuff. Definitely mm-hmm. reminded me of some of the cool moments in the cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah, you know what? There's a rumor that they're going to do more of Batman the Animated Series. That's going to be brought back.
Bring it on.
That was what was so frustrating about the movies was that they, you know, again, it kind of harkens to, you know, the Clone Wars stuff, that the Clone Wars stuff was so good and the Star Wars movies were lacking, or at least in my opinion. And then same here is with the Justice League cartoon and the Batman series. The cartoon was just so awesome. And yeah. then the movies would just not live up.
That Batman in the Warner Brothers animated versions of him, he really is the world's greatest detective.
Right.
That's ruined me for all other Batmans.
Right, and Kevin Conroy is just the perfect voice.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for people who just listen to this podcast and all the shows we cover, if you listen during Mandalorian, you just remind me, Eric, when you mentioned Clone Wars, since we talked about Mandalorian last, I binged through all of Clone Wars, all of Rebels and Resistance too, which sucked. But
I haven't watched that one.
Don't. But the Clone Wars, even though it's uneven, I was just so into it after a while. I had to get through that first like season and a half. But
then
it's like, and Rebels too, really, really good. So I recommend if you're super into Mandalorian, even just watching Rebels, because I feel like they're going to bring characters in from Rebels.
I don't think these are spoilers anymore, but before showed up, I thought that it might have been Ezra.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. You mentioned that. I think he is. I think he's been cast actually.
For
the Ahsoka series.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I think you and I might cover that, right?
I'm down.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Cool. Okay, where are we? Eric, Rich?
Derek O'Neill. I didn't hate the original version, but really enjoyed the Snyder cut. It was so much better than I expected. I don't think it would have played well if it was the original release, as there are definitely elements that could have been trimmed. I watched it like I was binging a high budget TV show. Some brilliant moments in that final hour pre-epilogue was a payoff worth waiting for. Yeah, that final battle was badass.
It was awesome.
Badass.
Brian White said some of the music / needle drops made me laugh when I don't think they were supposed to. When the Justice League finally showed up, it was good. Yeah, I read that it wasn't until 2 hours in that Batman was in costume and 3 hours in for Superman.
Before Superman, yeah.
Yeah, it's like if you would have been told as a kid, you know they're going to have a Justice League movie when you're grown up, but Superman won't appear until 3 hours in.
You're like, what?
Is it even that long?
Brad Holtz said, I just finished it. It was a masterpiece. Sure, as a comic nerd, I have a quibble or two, but nothing that took me out of it. The plot and story is now coherent and makes sense. It is beautiful to look at. I've always loved the look of Z's films. The 4 hours pass quickly. Then there is the dedication at the end to his daughter Autumn. I was in tears.
Yeah, that dedication, and then they played the song Hallelujah, which I guess was a favorite of hers.
Oh,
so
yeah. Well, that kind of cool. and kind of summarize what we've been saying.
I have a question. Was there an end credit scene? Because I didn't stick around to see if there was.
Okay. Nope. I don't think they needed to with 4 hours.
And the epilogue, right. Yeah. That was kind of like an end credit scene.
I like went through the end credits really like
quickly to see, sure.
Just to make sure there was nothing. Me too.
Absolutely. Now, what about, we didn't really talk about it, but, you know, I never even saw Suicide Squad because it was kind of panned and I just haven't bothered. And I especially heard that Jared Leto's Joker sucked, but here we have Jared Leto as the Joker again. Now, I thought he was okay. He didn't look like Hot Topic like he did in Suicide Squad. Maybe that would have helped. But what did you guys think about that, him being included in that scene?
I thought everyone did a good job acting wise, but I wasn't really sure what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why Batman and the Joker were there together and Deathstroke. Is that, was that Deathstroke?
Yeah.
Deathstroke.
Yeah.
So this is this alternate reality where Lois, it died somehow, and maybe it was Batman's fault, or at least Superman blames him for it. And so Darkseid gets control of Superman and uses him and, you know, apocalypses the whole planet, and the heroes that are left, it's suggested Aquaman's dead, Harley Quinn's dead, because she said, make the Joker die slowly.
Right, yeah.
So these are just a team that Batman could cobble together of people that were still alive.
Just anybody, huh?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's still a dream, but the suggestion, I mean, it's also the whole time that they're bringing Superman back to life, the Kryptonian ship is saying, I suggest that you do not do this. It is dangerous. And then once they do, it says, like, the future has been, seed for the future has been planted, which is sort of this foreboding that you just might have caused the downfall of your planet.
You just effed yourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, Jared Leto, I think, did okay. I mean,
yeah. I like Heath Ledger way better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I almost felt like he was trying to channel him. I mean, maybe with his look and, but he did okay.
Just get Paul Rubens. Come on.
Paul Rubens as the Joker. That might actually work.
It might actually. Yeah.
I tried to do that and it was pathetic.
I can't ever do it. I can't do it.
Good job, Rich.
All right. Rich is the best. That is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you guys so much. That was just as fun as I hoped it would be. Dan, ooh, ooh. I feel like you're really patient for doing this. This is not really your thing.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it. I really like hanging out with you guys. So
good.
It was fun.
I think it was a good perspective, you know, to have somebody who isn't for geeky.
And you had some questions that I'm sure some listeners would have had too.
Yeah. For the non-comic book people.
Yeah. Before we end, I want to mention that Handmaid's Tale Season 4 starts April 28th. That's what we'll be covering next. And I'll be back with two new co-hosts, Wendy and Daphne. Daphne hosts the Run For Your Lives podcast and has been a big part of my Patreon group. And Wendy has guested on when we've covered Game of Thrones and even when Diana and Lizzie covered Handmaid's Tale last season. So I'm really excited that they agreed to cover that. And I'm going to be covering it too. It's interesting because that show has some podcasts for it and I think it's all women. So I will be covering it from a man's perspective because I think that show just needs some good mansplaining.
No,
I'm
just kidding. Uh-oh.
I'm going to be quiet.
And dead threats.
I'm a little nervous, but Daphne's going to be leading that one. But I have a lot of thoughts about that show. It's a really good show. It's very disturbing, but important, I would say. So I'm, you know, looking forward to that. That's a month away. We'll do a catch-up episode before that. So maybe since it's a month away, we might cover another movie or something in between. But if not, we'll see you guys in about a month. Peace out.
Later,
dudes.
Bye.
Don't kill Lois.
Lois is the key.